The nation has been shocked, but perhaps not entirely surprised by the revelations of widespread misconduct in the Australian banking industry exposed by the Royal Commission. While no financial institution has emerged unscathed, the conduct of ANZ is one of the few that's facing criminal charges. ANZ's treasurer will front court next month, charged with cartel behaviour in relation to a 2015 share raising. This week, employees of ANZ admitted they dealt unethically with farmers. But ANZ CEO Shayne Elliott insists he's on a mission to improve practices at his bank. The Centre for Ethical Leadership at Ormond College at the University of Melbourne invited me to interview him. Here's my one-on-one conversation with ANZ CEO Shayne Elliott. Shayne Elliott, thanks for talking to me.
Thanks for having me tonight.
The banks fought tooth and nail against this Royal Commission, and we are finding out daily about the sort of worst excesses. Unbelievable stories are coming out. Yeah. Do you regret being part of that fight against this Royal Commission now?
That's a good question. I mean, let's remember at the end of the day, we asked for it. So the banks did get together.
That was at the end, right at the end, after a long campaign for
well,
many other people asking.
By definition, it's always going to be at the end when we ask for it. So it was.
But there had been, for a long time, people wanting a Royal Commission.
Sure. Part of the reason, and obviously it sounds incredibly self-serving, is that, you know, we thought that our efforts and resources were better served to be focused on actually fixing real issues rather than going through this. You know, but as I've said since then, you know, we were wrong. We were wrong to resist it. The reality is that revelations about the industry's practices and about even ourselves at ANZ have shocked people. And, you know, we thought we knew a lot. We didn't know everything.
Do you reflect on your own leadership here? You said 2.5 years. This is about ethical leadership. Has it been ethical?
There have been ethical lapses in the time of ANZ. There have been ethical lapses in the industry. You know, time will obviously judge my own contribution to that, either positively or negatively, but certainly there's been lapses, yes.
What failings do you see in the culture of the bank that you lead? What are the ethical challenges that you face now?
Well, you know, the ethical challenge, it's a really great question. I mean, you know, we live in a world of grey, unfortunately, in our business. And I've never worked anywhere else. I had a very brief stint in the stockbroking industry. I've only ever worked in a bank. I don't know anything else, so it's not for me to talk about other industries. The reality is our industry is complex. It sounds easy. You know, you take a bunch of deposits and you lend them out to other people. It's highly leveraged. The fact is we have multiple stakeholders, and our job is about managing the grey. It's about managing trade-offs. We talk about best interests a lot, and you know, inevitably we tend to think about the people borrowing money. We have a fiduciary responsibility to our shareholders and the people depositing the money to look after it and do the best with it. So we're always balancing these different needs. And I think, you know, on reflection, what's happened, and part of the reason we have the problems that we're confronted with today, is we get that balance wrong. And we focus too much on either shareholders in this particular case or other particular stakeholders. So yes, we get the balance wrong.
You've been the CEO of ANZ for 2.5 years,
yes,
as we said, but you've been a senior executive there since 2009.
Yes.
How much responsibility do you bear for that culture that's grown in that time period?
Well, a lot. I mean, I was there. I was part of that team. I mean, I can sit and give you all the good reasons why it shouldn't be thus, and I can argue why that some of that risk should be mitigated on me personally, but I feel a deep sense of responsibility for that, that I was part of a team that allowed that to happen. It wasn't like we sat around and consciously decided to do any of this. You know, it's not like we sat down and say, let's have a meeting and decide how we can act badly with farmers or, you know, not act in the best interest of our customers. But, you know, whether it's through our culture, whether it's through our processes, whether it's through our governance structures, whether it's through our relationships with our regulators, we allowed those things to happen. So, of course, I am accountable for that.
And so how do you repair the damage? Is it repairable?
Yes, of course it's repairable. I mean, let's remember that, you know, banks have a very important role in society, and they essentially are the grease in the economy and the machinery of the economy. They allow people to achieve their aspirations, whether that's aspiration owning a home or retiring or starting and growing a small business, whatever that might be. So we have an important role to play, and by and large we do it pretty well. So we absolutely can repair this, and we are doing good things, and we are repairing it. you know, I think the issue for us is we haven't recognised the need for change fast enough, and we haven't got on top of making the change quick enough, but that is absolutely what we're about
now. So why has there been a resistance until this point to getting on top of it and making it move faster?
Well, I don't know there was a resistance. I don't know that we sat around, again, I can only talk about us and say that we sat and said, hey, we've got all these problems, let's resist fixing them. You know, it's not as simple as that.
But there was a profit motive.
Yes, there's a profit motive. We need to make a profit.
That was part of the resistance, wasn't it?
Well, I don't know that it's part of the resistance, it's part of reality. We are a profit-making institution. We have shareholders. We have $58 billion of your money. It's not mine, it's a little bit of it's mine, but it's yours. It is mums and dads. Anybody who has a job in Australia, has superannuation, is thereby a shareholder in the banks. It's your money, and we have a fiduciary responsibility to look after it. And you need to be profitable so that we encourage that capital, so that we can leverage that capital and allow and fund business growth and people getting into homes and starting and running small businesses. So it's about balance. Profit in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing. It's a question of if we focus too much on profit at the expense of other things, then I would agree with you.
So the Australian Bankers Association, Anna Bligh, and I was here, argued on behalf of its members, including the ANZ, of course, that the Royal Commission would weaken public confidence in the banking sector. You kind of have weakened it all on your own, haven't you? Journalists are pretty blunt.
Yeah. I mean,
Google search.
With all due respect, I mean, I think it's just a fact that the Royal Commission has weakened confidence in the banking sector of Australia. That is true. Confidence today is less than it was a year ago before we had a Royal Commission. And, you know, I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing. So it is a fact that that's true. And we can debate whether there are good or bad things that come about as a result of that. Now, you know, as I said, I think the Royal Commission has been a good thing. It's painful. It's, in many days, it's excruciating for us to go through those things. But in some level, there's a kind of a cathartic process that's important for us in the industry to go through as well, so that in order that we can repair, acknowledge these issues and repair them.
This week at the Royal Commission, some ANZ employees have admitted to dealing unethically. You've already alluded to this, with farmers facing the loss of their properties.
Yes.
What is it about the culture that legitimised that kind of behaviour?
Well,
I mean, some of the stories that came out, I'm sure many people have consumed the news this week about farmers and the treatment of farmers, has just been unbelievable.
Yes, it is unbelievable. And, you know, it's an interesting culture, if we use that word, or psychology that says what allows groups of good people, and I know many of those people, and they're good people, with good morals and ethics, what enables those people to make bad decisions? And, you know, we're not, and again, I'm not excusing it in any way, our industry is not alone in that challenge. We, you know, sports clubs, other businesses, et cetera, have not dissimilar issues. It's a really interesting question. I think some of it in our own industry comes down to the fact that in large companies, we've atomised work. And so what we do today is we really focus on efficiency. And the way to achieve efficiency and be productive was to atomise work. So we have lots and lots of specialists. So I go to work and I'm a good person and I've been told to process some piece of paper and I do it to the best of my ability. I don't necessarily understand what my work, how the impact it has on the next team and the team after that and ultimately on the customer. I mean, let's remember that, you know, 50,000 people come to work every day at ANZ. Less than 20% of them ever see a customer. They don't see customers. Most of our people do not work in branches. You know, most of our people are not bankers. They're accountants. They write software code. They do all sorts of other interesting things. And so we've kind of dehumanized the work. And we've compartmentalised it. So it's very unclear for me the impact of what I do. So it's much easier, and I'm not excusing it, and I'm not rationalising it, but it's to say, well, I can put up a bit of a mask here and revert. The rules said I have to do this. The rules say I have to repossess the farm because, I you know, it's difficult for me to emotionally engage in that situation.
So you're the leader of this organisation, how do you change that? Have you told people you need to start emotionally connecting?
Yes, we do. So we're doing two, I think, you know, we could talk endlessly about that, but I think fundamentally it's about two things. One is humanising the work. That's one thing. The other thing is changing the nature of work. So we're fundamentally changing the way we've organised work. So away from that compartmentalised, siloed kind of nature of work, working in self-directed teams, where the teams are accountable for not just delivering a service to customers, but actually the final customer outcome. And if the customers don't like it, they're the team that get the feedback and they're responsible for fixing it. We've got a long way to go. We've converted 3,000 of our people into that way of working. We're doing another 9,000 as we speak, and ultimately we want to roll that through the company to again kind of change the nature of how we do things.
Is it about the kind of people you hire? You said they're not unethical people. They've just committed these you know practices which are wrong. But is it actually, I mean, I'm going to challenge you on that. At their core, is it perhaps that their ethics aren't quite right?
Well, that might be, Sue. That may be true. Inevitably, we will, look, we're a broad church. We have, you know, 50,000 people. Half of them come to work in Australia. They're ordinary Australians. They do not come through the turnstiles at work and turn into criminals. You know, they are, we have every walk of life. We have people who vote for every political party. We have every kind of ethnic group, every religion, every sexual preference. We have every, you know, we are a representative group. So I'm not sure that it's necessary that we have bad people or somehow we attract bad people. I think we have not done a good job of when we find we have bad people, just like the community does, of managing it, doing something about it. Can we do a better job in terms of professional standards? Absolutely. You know, the reality is, whether it's the regulation, whether it's our own standards, we have not demanded high enough qualifications. We have not demanded high enough kind of continual learning, and we absolutely have to do that.
The journalist in me has to go down that road. Do you think there should be more regulation?
I think there should. I think there is absolutely a value in regulation. I have no issue with that. In and of itself, more regulation is not the answer. Targeted, thoughtful regulation is. And, you know, I think one of the risks that we have, and it's understandable, is that we will go potentially too far into regulation as the answer. But some regulation, absolutely the answer. For example, regulating qualification standards of financial planners or mortgage brokers or whoever it might be, that's a good thing. Of course we should do that. I would imagine that most mums and dads out there imagine that that is in place today.
Another issue that's come up repeatedly is people's interest rates doubling from, say, 9 to 18% if they miss a payment. Yeah. What purpose does a practice like that serve other than to send someone who's already struggling basically to the wall or deeper into financial trouble?
So again, that goes to this issue of balance. It's not my money. It's not my money that I'm lending to a customer. It's another customer's money, or it's another customer's capital. It's our shareholders and our depositors. And we have to, I think all of us would understand that we should, when we're charging people interest, we should assess the risk of that loan. And higher risk people should probably pay more for that loan than lower risk people. And if we don't accept that principle, what's the outcome? Guess what? People who are high risk will not get loans at all. And so what you're talking about is a very complex issue, which is what happens when the risk profile of a customer changes. I thought you were low risk, so I charged you low. You turn out to be high risk, so I should, in order to protect our depositors' money and their interest, charge you more. Now, I think that's kind of a rational outcome. I think the way that we communicate it and the way that we do it and the way, you know, that perhaps we don't give our customers enough options and timing to seek alternatives.
It's often the case, we saw that with the CBA, that banks claim that bad behaviour is limited to individual employees.
Yeah.
Do you accept that it's systemic?
So I can't comment on the CBA, I don't know, but,
no, but
I would say...
the problems in the banks are systemic.
I think some of the problems in the bank are cultural, and therefore by definition they are systemic. I do not accept that we can sit and say, oh, it's just three people over in that corner who are the problem and the rest of everything else is fine. It clearly isn't. That is clearly not the case. There's clearly a broader issue afoot, yes.
At the heart of what you're saying, and you've said it publicly before, you made the address to the Royal Commission earlier this year, which, you know, I watched and have reread before.
To the parliamentary inquiry, yes. Yeah.
But what you said, it was a parliamentary inquiry, yes, you're right. But what you said essentially is that you've got the message.
Yes.
Right? That you understand. But is that because of the role, if I can give some credit to my own profession, of the fearless reporting of exposing some of this behaviour in the Royal Commission. Is it a public relations exercise?
No.
Well, it's partly, isn't it?
No, I don't think it's public. Well, you're using the term in a very, in a certain way that kind of, I think, undermines the value of public relations. If it is, hey, we want to have a good relationship with our community in which we operate and our customers, yes, of course we do. Of course we do. They're our customers. PR, when we use that word, unfortunately, it sounds like spin. We're kind of managing some sort of superficial relationship. No, it's not because of that. It's because we accept that we've got this wrong and we want to fix it.
Some people in the financial industry, including AMP executives and your own treasurer, are facing criminal charges for alleged misconduct. Yes. ANZ is defending your treasurer. What message does that send?
Well, it sends a message that we have an opinion that we're right. I mean, I think for ANZ, again, when we have made mistakes, when we have treated people badly, it may be too slow, but we have owned up and we have said, and I think, you know, I'm proud of the fact that at ANZ we've acknowledged and said we were wrong, we've made mistakes, we're going to fix things. But sometimes you have to say, actually, we don't think we were wrong, we're going to take a stand. And on this case, and again, this is in front of the courts, I can't really talk very much about it. We don't really know the details of the prosecution case, but from what we know, we're saying we don't think we've done anything wrong here and we're going to defend ourselves.
Does a financial planner or an advisor or a banker whose misconduct costs their clients money deserve to face criminal penalties in your view?
Well, I'm not a lawyer. I think there are certainly cases where the conduct of people who work in our industry should face criminal charges, no different than in people who work in a mining company or an airline or in the local baker. If you break the law, you should face criminal charges. That's a simple concept. I accept that.
This week, the government's failed to, it's parked, it's fair to say, it's company tax cuts. You knew I was going there. And partly the reason it struggled with these company tax cuts, partly, because of the banks.
Yes.
I mean, that's all you hear, that the banks are going to get the tax cut. Mm. And when people hear that, they tell pollsters that they don't want that to happen.
Mm.
So have you essentially, have the banks, did that, the banks deserve a tax cut in your view?
Look, tax is a complex issue. We haven't been terribly outspoken on it. I don't think we should be as an industry, and I don't think we should be as ANZ. The only thing we've said is we think tax cuts, if well funded, I mean, you know, it's easy to tax, you know, cut taxes. You've got to figure out how to pay for it. If it's rational, we think it's in the interest of our customers in particular, and we'll encourage, you know, economic growth, and that's our role, is to be a spokesperson for that. As ANZ, you know, we have kept pretty quiet on it for reasons, because, you know, we don't sit here and decide, I think my chairman has quite rightly pointed out, we don't sit here and decide, well, gosh, America's got lower taxes, let's move ANZ to America. You know, we're here. We've paid our taxes for 185 years, and we'll continue to do so.
That's interesting you say that, because do you think you would have been more outspoken about tax cuts if these ethical issues around your bank and other banks were not in the spotlight?
I don't believe so. I mean, it's something that we've talked about actually as a company in the past. But I think, you know, we're a little bit unique, and part of the reason is for that is that, as you know, I'm sure many of you are shareholders in the banks. Banks pay very, very high dividends, which are fully franked, which our shareholders really, really like. So we're slightly different than many other industries here. Mm. So we have a different point of view.
Do you accept that most Australians would look though at this issue and think that the banks don't deserve a tax cut?
Well, I think this is a really interesting point. You know, we talk about the banks. The banks are owned by most Australians. So as I said, if you have a job in Australia, you are almost certainly a shareholder in a bank, if not all of them. So this idea that these banks are some mythical thing over there and the tax cuts go to, they don't go to me or my executive team, they go to the shareholders, who are you.
A lot of this comes down to our own personal ethics, and this is obviously, yes, you know, such an important room to have that conversation in. Have you reflected on your own personal ethics and the way that you bring those ethics to the leadership of the ANZ?
Yes. I mean, I can't imagine there's very many people in our industry, irrespective of what your seniority is, who haven't rethought the role of our industry in the community and what's happened, and your, you know, my personal role in that. And to your point before, you know, how could I have sat there and either consciously or unconsciously allowed this to happen? So yes, it does. It does go to your personal ethics.
So on a personal level, how have you gone through that journey?
Well, it's made me question myself, my own, the times perhaps where I should have said something that I thought but didn't speak up. When I had a question about a practice, a customer policy we were putting in place, where perhaps I wasn't totally over it, but I had a doubt and I didn't say something. And I didn't put up my hand and say, I don't feel good about this. So, you know, those sorts of things. It really helps for me having a 13-year-old daughter. And I mean that seriously. My daughter, Lara, has taught me a lot, because I go home, we talk about things that happen in school. And she tells me the stories that I learn there bring things home to me. What do you do when you see another kid cheat in an exam? What happens when you see a bully in the playground? Those things are exactly the same things that happen in our world.
So when you reflect again on past events, you do regret that you didn't speak, as you say, when there was that voice in your head going, this is not quite right.
Yes. I mean, I you know, there are times when I say, gee, in hindsight, and it's always a wonderful thing, I should have said something, I should have asked more questions on something. Gee, I never really thought that through to exactly what we're talking about at the beginning, which is the difference between, I thought I was making very sensible comments in my world and my role and whatever my job description was, but not necessarily thinking it all the way through to the impact on, you know, a customer at the end. So, yes.
So what's your test for success then now? Well, is it a scandal-free bank? Is that your dream? A bank that's never again on the front page?
But no, No, I don't go home thinking that is the measure of success. I think, we want to be the most respected financial institution in the region. We want to be a place that people feel proud of as a place to work. And when, you know, I, from the day I took over as CEO, and I made this little speech around what we want to do, and I repeat it, we want to be a bank that people love. And that may seem so far away from where we are today, and it is, but that's what we want. I want people to say, I love working with ANZ, I love working there, I love the fact that they're my bank, I'm proud of them as my bank, they enable me to achieve my aspirations in life. And I'm fortunate that actually, you know, despite all the things that are going on, we're starting with some very strong positives, and we do have some people who think like that today.
So the test for success seems like it's some time out. What's your time frame for turning that ship around?
Well, Peter talked tonight about being a custodian. When I was, you know, got offered this role, I read a lot about the history of the bank, which I wasn't really aware of. And as I mentioned, it goes back to the 1830s. I'm just a custodian. It's not my bank. I'm here for a short period of time. My job is a simple one, is to leave it in better shape than I found it. Somebody told me when I got the job, my predecessor, within about a year of his appointment, had to deal with the global financial crisis. His predecessor had to deal, within about a year of his appointment, the Asian financial crisis. And I've got to deal with this. I'll take their crisis any day. I mean, the financial crisis and the Asia financial crisis, with all due respect, as complicated as they were, there's kind of a rule book as a bank. You know what to do, protect your balance sheet, focus on liquidity, you know, blah, blah, blah. This is sort of uncharted territory. But the good news is, what we know is that these challenges really make or break companies, and great companies and great teams and organizations really flourish in times like this. These are wake-up calls. These are the times when new teams come through and flourish, and I believe that is an opportunity for us. We may not get there, but we're going to do our darndest to do it.
Banks, of course, are very competitive with each other.
Yes.
Are you now in open competition with the other banks to be the most ethical bank?
I do not use that term. It is not our goal to be the most ethical bank.
Why not? Oh. That's a good goal.
Well, somebody else already took that line. It's a nice idea, and I'm not saying we don't want to be ethical, but as I said, we want to be a bank that people love. And I yes, we're in, of course we want to win. You know, strategy in business is about winning. We want to win. We want to be the bank that people love the most. And you know, I don't want to be part of the big four. I want to be ANZ, and I want people to see us differently and better, and a company that people feel proud of working for. Yes, it is competitive. Despite what people think, it's fiercely competitive in that way.
Shane Elliott, you've been very generous with your time and dealing with my, you know, pointy questions. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.